Module 10 is data diving. This covers chapter 10 in the textbook, so let's go ahead and get out our study sheet. And as you can see, we're going to be talking about big data. We'll go into some detail, including the characteristics of big data. We'll then talk about different types of data analysis, and then we'll talk about data-driven decision-making. We'll start off, though, with a discussion of big data, and then we'll talk about traditional data analysis. We'll move on to talk about modern data analysis, and we'll wrap up this module with data-driven decision-making. Let's start off by talking about big data. It is important for risk managers to understand the different types of big data. The varieties, volume, and sources of data are rapidly increasing, and they're going to continue to increase at a more rapid pace going forward. What we'll do in just a second is talk about big data versus traditional data. And when we do that, we're going to use the 5V characteristics for our comparison. The reason they're called V characteristics is because each one of these 5 characteristics begins with the letter V, and it's a way of comparing big data to traditional data. We'll also talk about the categories of big data. We have internal and external data, and structured and unstructured data. So each item of data we can categorize by these. For example, we can have internal unstructured data, we can have external structured data, any one of the combinations there, we'll go through those. Let's start off though by talking about data characteristics. Characteristics that differentiate big data from traditional data are the following, the 5 V's. The first one is volume. There's an enormous amount of data available and it is increasing. A comparison, if you look in the book, says that if traditional data was like the planet Earth, big data would essentially be the solar system. It's that much bigger, that much more voluminous. The second characteristic is variety. A large amount of big data is unstructured. Traditional data is structured. We said that before. Data in a database with defined fields, such as claims records, that's an example of structured data. That's what we typically see for traditional data. Big data can be structured or unstructured. Velocity, that's the third characteristic. Data is arriving at an insurer at a constantly increasing speed, and also the types of data that are coming in are also increasing. That's velocity. That's one way of comparing or differentiating between big data and traditional data. A lot more velocity to big data. The last two are veracity and value. Let's talk about veracity first. Veracity represents the completeness and accuracy of data. Unstructured big data is more likely to have less veracity than structured data. But even structured data is not perfect. Even if we had structured traditional data, that's not going to be perfect. So just because unstructured big data is less accurate, less complete, that doesn't mean that it's worthless. It's still very valuable. It's just that it doesn't have the same veracity as structured data. Value. Big data has great potential to add value. The goal of data science is to analyze data to provide meaningful results. Those are the 5 V's that differentiate big data from traditional data. Organizations make decisions about which data to capture and store, and data can be categorized as internal data or external data. Internal data is captured and stored by organizations, and that includes master data identifying customers, vendors, and prospects. Internal data also includes accounting records, HR records, customer emails, customer contracts. Those are also types of internal data. For an insurer, internal data includes claims history and even adjuster notes. Insurers possess large quantities of internal data that have not been used necessarily, and sometimes the data is not used because it's too voluminous. There's a lack of techniques to access the data. Risk managers rely on internal data to monitor various risk factors. For example, sales and inventory records can alert manufacturing teams to potential problems meeting product demand. Data analytics can help risk managers compile and analyze the large volume of internal data owned by the organization. Data errors are often uncovered by investigating the validity of any deviations. Another classification of data is external data. External data belongs to an entity other than the one using it. That can include open data, which can be freely used by anyone, such as data on Wikipedia, or public data, such as open government records. Privacy issues are a concern when using external data. Regulations have been passed by various states and countries relating to privacy. For example, employers may obtain credit files of a prospective employee, but the prospective employer must be careful to make sure to gain consent from the employee before accessing that data if consent is required under the regulations. Some commonly used types of third-party data include economic data, and that would include interest rates, asset prices, exchange rates, consumer price index information, which is inflation information, and various other types of economic data that is available. Also, third-party data includes regulatory information. Risk managers must, of course, stay abreast of changes in regulatory information. And then demographics is another type of third-party external data. Additionally, insurers use credit ratings for both personal and commercial lines of service. So that's internal and external data. Sometimes there's a fine line between the two. External data may become stored as internal data. And one example where we really see an overlap is in the use of telematics, which of course are those devices that go in cars and trucks. Vehicle data from the telematics is more likely internal data, but drivers' driving habits should probably be characterized as external data. We also said that we can categorize big data as structured or unstructured. Traditional data is always structured, as we said, but big data can be structured or unstructured. Structured data is organized into databases that are often linked to each other. Telematics is an example of structured external data. Why is it external? Because we don't own the device that it's on. We don't own the car that it's on. We may not even own the telematics device either. We're gathering data from an external source. Another example of structured data is policy information. Policy information. That, of course, would be internal structured data, wouldn't it? Because the insurance company already owns that. Financial data is another example of structured data, but of course that would be external data. Also includes policy information, claims history, and financial data. And as we said, traditional data is an example of structured data. In fact, traditional data is always structured. Big data can be structured or unstructured. Unstructured data is not organized. It includes adjuster's notes, information from social media. That's unstructured. Data science is used for both structured and unstructured data, but it's especially useful for unstructured data. So hopefully to make things a little bit easier for you, we put together this table that shows you different examples of structured and unstructured big data and external and internal big data. And hopefully this will give you a frame of reference so you really get a good understanding of it. But we have structured data that's external, and that would include something like financial data, telematics, labor figures. Those are structured types of external data. What's some types of structured internal data? Customer information, policy information, claims history. That's all in databases that's already owned by the insurance company. That's structured and that's internal. There's also unstructured big data. Unstructured external data would include things like news reports, streaming video, social media, things like that. Those are external and they're certainly unstructured. And we have internal unstructured data, like, for example, adjuster's notes, surveillance videos, voice recordings, things like that. Those are internal types of data, but they are unstructured. Hopefully this helps you understand the difference between structured, unstructured, external, and internal. So let's do a practice question. Which one of the following is a characteristic of unstructured data? A. It is organized into databases that are often linked together. Well, that's actually what structured data is, so A is false. What about B? It could include items such as text or images from social media. Absolutely, it could, so B is our answer. C, it includes telematics and other types of data with predetermined fields. Well, telematics and other data with predetermined fields is considered structured data. D, it cannot be used to create meaningful information for data scientists. The unstructured data is usually the most meaningful data for data scientists. So once again, B is our answer. Let's talk about traditional data analysis. Data analysis, of course, has been around for decades, but because of all of the new technology and the ability to access more data and do more research and more analysis, data analysis has become more complicated. Predictive analytics are often used to reduce risks and increase revenue. And there are some common data analysis techniques that we're about to go through, and you'll notice that we've actually gone through a couple of these already, and we'll go through them in a little more detail now. We'll talk about exploratory data analysis, which we have not covered yet, classification tree, which is also known as a decision tree, which we actually talked about in the last module. We'll talk about regression analysis, and if you remember, we went through linear regression in the previous module. And we'll also talk about cluster analysis. Let's go through each one of these. The first category of data analysis is exploratory data analysis. Exploratory data analysis involves charts and graphs, and it shows data patterns and correlations among them. It can be used before developing and testing a predictive model, and it produces a basic understanding of the data on which the model will be based. Of course, the predictive ability is only as strong as the data that it's built on. There are several exploratory data analysis techniques. Three names that you should be familiar with, three techniques, are scatterplot, bubble plot, and correlation matrix. You should be familiar with those names. You don't need to know a whole lot about the various different techniques, but you should be familiar with the names scatterplot, bubble plot, and correlation matrix. A scatterplot's a two-dimensional plot of point values that represent the relationship between two attributes. A bubble plot is very similar, although it could actually show additional attributes in the, over and above two attributes. For example, let's say that we want to plot on a chart the average accident frequency and the average accident severity for drivers by age group. What we could do is we could set up a chart with an x-axis, which of course is horizontal, the y-axis, which is vertical, and the x-axis could be driver age, 21 to 30, 31 to 40, 41 to 50, and so forth. The y-axis could be the number of accidents, in other words, frequency, one accident, two accidents, three accidents. And let's say that for the drivers in the age range of 21 to 30, the average is three accidents. So we could just plot on that chart at the number 3, where it intersects with ages 21 to 30. Now, one thing you may have noticed in that particular type of plotting exercise, we're only taking into account the frequency of accidents by age. What we're not taking into account is the severity of accidents by age. And so with the bubble plot, we can actually add in that third variable. What we can do is plot, as I said before, three accidents for age 21 to 30. We plot that on the chart as a bubble. And the size of the bubble represents the severity of the accident. So not only are we showing the frequency of the accidents by the location of the bubble, the size of the bubble reflects the severity of the accidents. That's a bubble plot. And then we have the correlation matrix as well. Those are types of exploratory data analysis. We also have the classification tree, and we did talk about this previously. This is the same thing as a decision tree. A classification or decision tree is a supervised learning technique. It uses a structure similar to a tree, segments data according to known attributes, and it determines the value of a target variable. I gave an example when we were talking about the decision tree, and our decision was going to be whether or not to invest in a new product. So the initial decision was, we invest or do we not invest? And the outcomes of investing were either a great outcome, a good outcome, or a poor outcome. And we assigned probabilities. I think it was 40%, 30%, and 30% respectively, but that was an example of a decision tree. One thing, though, that we did not discuss when we talked about decision trees is there is some terminology that's used with these decision or classification trees. The trees contain nodes, arrows, and leaf nodes. Leaf nodes indicate the values of the target variable. So, for example, if we have the decision to invest or not invest, that would be our initial node. Sometimes that initial node is called the root node. It's really the starting point. And then we would have arrows that lead to the various decisions that could be made. And those various decisions that could be made are sometimes referred to as leaf nodes. So that's some terminology with the classification tree, which is also known as the decision tree. A third analysis method is regression analysis, and we also discussed that in the last module. Regression analysis is a statistical technique. It estimates relationships between variables. If you remember, in the last module, we went through the formula for linear regression, and that was y equals m times x plus b, where, remember, the m was the slope of the line, the x was the independent variable, and then the b in that equation was the y-intercept. We went through that formula in the last module. Linear regression predicts the numerical value of a target variable based on values of explanatory variables. So we went through that. We discussed how that formula was calculated. We did an example of it. You want to know that for your exam. That's an important formula to know. That's linear regression. There's also the generalized linear model. That increases the flexibility of a linear model by linking it with a non-linear function. And finally, we have cluster analysis. Cluster analysis is a model that determines previously unknown groupings of data. It can be used to search for previously unknown information or relationships. It's a collection of algorithms that puts data into groups or clusters according to well-defined similarity rules. It's used when a professional has a problem to solve but does not know the variables a predictive model must analyze to do so. Let's say that we're trying to determine if there's a relationship between the time lag in reporting employee injury claims and the size of those claims. Data analytics techniques that use known variables would not be effective in that case. So what we could use is cluster analysis. That helps us with the unknown. So let's do a practice question. Which one of the following is an example of exploratory data analysis? And we have a decision tree, a scatter plot, generalized linear model, or cluster analysis. And if you remember, we talked about three different types of exploratory data analysis, and one of those was the scatter plot. So B is our answer. Let's talk about modern data analysis, which represents modern ways of acquiring and interpreting information. We're going to discuss data mining, text mining, neural networks, and social network analysis. We'll start by talking about data mining. Data mining is the process of extracting hidden patterns from data. It's used in a wide range of applications for research and fraud detection. Data mining techniques provide incredible amounts of data, and after the data is amassed, insights and constructive outcomes must be gleaned from it to make it a useful form of data analysis. So that's data mining. We also have text mining. Text mining turns text into numbers that are then used in mathematical equations or models. There's a lot of different text out there. Sometimes it's on paper, sometimes it's stored in a computer. And if we can gather that text and turn it into useful information to do analysis, that's the whole point of text mining. There are several steps in the text mining process. First of all, we retrieve and prepare the text. And then a very important step is converting unstructured data into structured data. We talked a little bit about structured data and unstructured data before. When it comes to unstructured data, there's human-produced data and there's machine-produced data. We'll talk about that in just a second. With text mining, the second step is to convert this unstructured data into structured data. For example, an email is typically considered unstructured data. Now, granted, there are some common elements of every email. It's got a sender, a date, a time, that's all the same. That's somewhat structured, but the contents of each email is typically different, which makes it unstructured data. When you think of unstructured data, it's essentially data that has no basic universal organization, and therefore it's not easy to put that data in a matrix format. We need to convert that to structured data, and then we create a data mining model to help the organization achieve its objectives. And then, of course, you always want to evaluate any model's effectiveness after it's been implemented. I mentioned just a second ago that there are two different types of unstructured data. There's human-produced and machine-produced. Human-produced unstructured data includes emails, spreadsheets, text documents, although there are some elements of emails that could be structured, like the date and time, the sender, the recipient. But for the most part, emails are human-produced, unstructured data. Websites, social media sites, those are types of unstructured data that's human-produced. Text messages and phone recordings, audio files and pictures, those are all types of human-produced, unstructured data. Also includes letters, reports, even PowerPoint presentations. There are also types of machine-produced unstructured data, and that includes satellite imagery, seismic imagery, surveillance videos, and sensor data. And there's also, of course, structured data. Structured text-based data could include things like street addresses, names, even genders. Precise, consistent format for storage is what we're looking for when we're dealing with structured data. We also have neural networks. Neural networks are a form of artificial intelligence that's also known as deep learning. It enables a computer to learn as it accumulates more data. There are three layers of neural networks. You definitely need to know this for your exam. We have the input layer. That's where the data collection layer. That's where information is entered into the model and assigned an importance level. We then have the hidden layer. That's where all the work takes place, the hidden layer. The network executes processes it was programmed to perform. And then finally, we have the output layer, which offers the results of the analysis. With the neural network, accuracy can be determined by comparing the anticipated results with the actual results. And then the network can then learn from any inaccuracies by running the process in reverse. And oftentimes what happens is the process is run in reverse, and then forward again, and then reverse, and then forward again, and reverse, sometimes hundreds of times. And as it's run over and over, the computer's learning. And as a result, it can make modifications and make changes to get us the result we want. It allows the network to learn how to arrive at the desired result. There are a couple of drawbacks of neural networks. For example, the neural networks can be overtrained, and if the network reviews data in too much detail, it may be unable to operate in a larger framework. Also, the hidden phase process, that's where all the work is done, may be too incomprehensible to be evaluated thoroughly. Another type of modern data analysis is social network analysis. When we think of social networks, we often think of Facebook and Instagram, for example. But actually, a social network encompasses a broader scope of connections. A social network is a group of individuals who share relationships and the flow of information. It can consist of humans, websites, of course, computers, even animals are considered a social network. Each individual in the network is considered a node. Remember, we used the phrase node earlier when we were talking about decision trees. The link between two nodes represents their relationship. Social network analysis measures and charts the relationship between the nodes as well as the communication between those nodes. So how do we measure the communication and the closeness of the nodes? We use centrality measures. Centrality measures quantify a node's relationship to other nodes in the same network. There are three centrality measures that are used in social network analysis. The first one is degree, and that's the connections each node has. For example, that could be the number of Facebook friends an organization sales associate has. That's the degree, the connections each node has. So the number of Facebook friends would be an example. We also have closeness. That's the average distance between a particular node and the other nodes in a network. Let's say that you and I both work for the same company, but based on email traffic, you have a lot more closeness to the other employees in the organization than I do. That's an example of closeness. We can measure that through email traffic. And third, we have betweenness, which is how many times a particular node is part of the shortest path between two other nodes. Betweenness is essentially about location compared to the other nodes. So let's do a couple of practice questions. Which one of the following statements is correct regarding a neural network? A major advantage of a neural network is that they can be overtrained. That is true that they can be overtrained, but that's actually a drawback, not a major advantage. So A is false. B, the input layer of the neural network is where all the work takes place. No, it's the hidden layer where all the work takes place. So B is false. What about C? A neural network is a form of artificial intelligence, or AI. That is a true statement. C is our answer. And D, centrality measures are used by the neural network to store data. Centrality measures are used to determine the efficiency of the flow between social network connections. They're not used by the neural network to store data. So D is false. C is our answer. Don, a manager at SuperInsurer, has just designed a major change in company policy. He has asked two employees of the company, Jack and Jill, to spread the news of the change to other employees. Based on centrality measures of the company's email traffic, Don believes Jill will spread the news more rapidly and to more employees through email than Jack. This belief is based on Jill's high measure in which one of the following centrality measures? And we've got closeness, degree, betweenness, and clairvoyance, which isn't one of the measures. This is an example of closeness. We mentioned this before. This is the measure of the average distance between a particular node and the other nodes in a network. That's closeness. So A is our answer. Let's wrap up Module 10 by talking about data-driven decision-making. Data-driven decision-making is a process to gather and analyze relevant data and evaluate the results to guide business strategies. It can improve the types of data, methods of analysis, and results. Data science provides more advanced methods of aggregating and analyzing data. Data science can help insurers improve results through data-driven decision-making. Let's talk a little bit about that. Automating decision-making for improved accuracy and efficiency. Many insureds nowadays, they provide auto insurance quotes online using some computer algorithm. So if you apply for auto insurance online, it'll give you a quote right away. Organizing large amounts of new data. Can use telematics to organize data based on different criteria like braking patterns. Discovering new data relationships. And even exploring new data sources, such as claims adjusters' notes. Currently, insurers only process about 10 to 15% of the available structured data that they have. So we can use big data and use these data analytics to take advantage of some of that data that we already have on hand or some of that external data to better make decisions. There are two different approaches to data-driven decision-making. The first approach is the descriptive approach. This is applied when an insurer has a specific problem. Data-driven decision-making is not used beyond the specific problem. It's basically one and done. The descriptive approach is a one and done kind of deal. The analysis is not repeated. Let's say that an insurance company changed its underwriting for auto policies a couple of years ago, and now it wants to study the results one time to determine if this change was effective. We would use the descriptive approach. Just do one-time analysis and that's it. The other approach to data-driven decision-making is the predictive approach. The predictive approach is an approach that provides a method that can be used repeatedly. This is over and over again. Provides information for data-driven decision-making by humans, computers, or both. For example, we talked a little bit about automated underwriting where you can get a quote right away by going online, typing in some information about yourself. That's where a computer's making a decision every time someone applies for insurance. That would be the predictive approach. We're going to use this over and over and over again. There's a decision-making model. Let's go through the steps of the data-driven decision-making model. The first step, very important, the most important step, is to define the risk management problem. Isn't this setting the goals, the objectives? It's understanding what the business needs, right? That's the first step. You've got to figure out what you want before you can go through this whole process. After clearly defining the problem, quality data must then be gathered. So we figure out the problem, then we gather the data. The data variables must be identified, must eliminate data with missing or inaccurate information, and must improve the quality of data if necessary. Sometimes low quality data is actually acceptable, but in many cases we do have to improve the quality of the data, clean it up. The risk manager then chooses appropriate big data analysis techniques, and we could use a descriptive model, a predictive model. The risk manager reviews trends, relationships, and behaviors to gather insights, then makes a decision. So let's do a practice question. XYZ Insurance Company has implemented a website to sell homeowners insurance. Each time a person applies for homeowners insurance, automatic underwriting is initiated that makes the underwriting decision and issues a price quote to the customer. This is an example of which type of approach to data-driven decision-making. And we did say that if it's used over and over and over again, that's the predictive approach. So C is our answer, and that concludes Module 10.